He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles. And if you were among the naive, delusional people who thought LeBron James would immediately transform this hodgepodge collection of poor shooting kids and oddball veterans into a title contender, go to your room and ask yourself why these Lakers don't play defense or make three-point shots. All the hype and BS known to 21st century media cannot change this fact of current LeBron life. The cast around James is not yet ready to fully support his almighty legend in his fourth NBA adventure, and this season will be LeBron's most frustrating since his early Cleveland years. Did you see him get mad and bark in the fourth quarter? In a 128-119 debut loss in Portland, LeBron looked ordinary, unable to take over in the fourth quarter as Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, and Nick Stauskas. Yes, Nick Stauskas made the big shots that the great LeBron did not. Yeah, he went for 26 and 12 in 39 minutes, but he also had six turnovers, poor defensive moments, a ridiculous behind-the-back throwaway in the final seconds. What was that? And some big three-point misses. He did not hit a tray on a night when the Lakers, here in the three-point era, went 7 of 30 beyond the arc and had 10 of their shots blocked. Here was LeBron, now 0-1 in purple and gold, and not overly impressive.
That's all I've been preaching, you know, since the season started, since we got back to work. That's going to take patience from our team, from all of us, just to you know, figure out one another, figure out what we're good at. Figure out what we're not so good at and how we can, you know, be better at it. So it was a good first test for us to be in a building where they haven't lost in the 2000s. I always kind of compare it, you know, to like instant oatmeal. It's not that fast. It takes a while for the chemistry to get to where you can close your eyes and know exactly where your guys are, you know. So that's what we're going to work towards too, both not only defensively but offensively. It's going to be an everyday process for our ball club.
But hey, he is a Hollywood mogul, and on the TNT telecast, you saw commercials for LeBron's documentary, Shut Up and Dribble, which is all that matters, right? The story of America, as the teaser said. On the court, does LeBron deserve a mulligan until the next superstar piece arrives next summer, as Reggie Miller says? No, he does not deserve a mulligan. If LeBron has a flaw in this absurd ongoing comparison to the all-time great he never will match, Michael Jordan, it's that he doesn't always make the talent around him better. It's just assumed, oh, all of these guys will become great players. Really? I have seen players in LeBron's past just sort of remain average. They don't get better. They even regress at times. It's just one game, this loss, so don't overreact. But I think it was a necessary comeuppance and reminder to the foolhardy people out there that the Lakers in the rugged Western Conference will be challenged just to make the playoffs. They can't shoot three-pointers. They don't play perimeter defense, letting Lillard and this journeyman Stauskas burn them. They lack cohesion right now, especially when veteran Rajon Rondo sits and wayward Lonzo Ball, who was 2 of 7, 1 assist, a minus 15 differential, plays without production or a legitimate NBA jump shot. And I'm sure the ball buster LeVar, who hasn't been heard from in a while, will be tweeting today about Coach Luke Walton. And that fast pace, especially in the first half, that's a good way to burn out James, soon to be 34, who was comfortable in recent years with that plodding pace in Cleveland. The LeBron Lakers will get better. They will make the playoffs, as I said yesterday. I'm looking at a 6 or a 7 seed. And LeBron can still dunk with the best of them with 2 early whoppers. But every time the Lakers lose, Luke Walton will deal with probing eyes. Here was the coach who has to deal with LeBron James in his age 34 season with not much around him. Good luck, Luke.
But, yeah, we needed to get some stops, and we turned the ball over too many times in the fourth. So I think we had 5 turnovers in the fourth, which we got to clean up a little bit. But that's, you know, the first game, we'll be able to learn a lot from that. And I was overall happy with the way that we played. Obviously not happy about losing, but, you know, we'll take some good stuff from that.
What early things did you learn about rotation and trying to figure out which guys should play with?
We'll watch the tape first before commenting on any of that. But I thought guys competed, did some nice things.
Thoughts on LeBron's first game?
I'm glad he's on our team. He's pretty good at the game of basketball. The way he can kind of control and lead from the court, it's impressive. But obviously thrilled that he's with us and looking forward to the rest of the season.
What did you see about what he did for the young guys?
Well, he keeps the guys calm. You know, especially on the road in a hostile environment, when other teams are going on a run, he has a nice calming way about him. But you know, he's been great since he's been here, and he's been good for the young guys, and we'll continue to get better.
Walton says he'll be monitoring LeBron's minutes, especially important if the Lakers plan to keep pushing that pace as they do. James said he would rather play as often as he chooses.
All my coaches want to figure out a way how to lessen my minutes. I keep telling them I'm stronger when I play more minutes, but they won't listen to me, so it's okay. I like it.
LeBron makes his regular season Staples Center debut Saturday night against Houston. That means an 0-2 start and some much-needed restraint in L.A. and beyond. Already, Charles Barkley is on the Lakers' collective ass, not understanding the grand plan.
So I don't know what the Lakers are doing. Are they going to try to groom those young guys and go forward with LeBron, or are they going to play those old guys? I think that's what's going to be the most fascinating thing. I mean, I have no idea what the Lakers are doing. Are they a young team or they're an old team? And I think that's what I'm going to be watching for the most.
The bigger question in the end, who joins LeBron next summer? Kevin Durant, Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard, or the emerging league monster Anthony Davis? That's still a hell of a long time for these people in L.A. to wait. I don't think they're going to be patient. I've already lost patience. One night. We normally aren't amazed by large market, big payroll behemoths with unlimited resources, but the Boston Red Sox are special, having forged a culture so different than their forerunners in America's most uptight, media-mad baseball city. This team was loose and carefree all year, and an offensive powerhouse, a collaboration between storied baseball man Dave Dombrowski and his hand-picked rookie manager Alex Cora, who at $800,000, that's it, becomes an all-time bargain after leading the Red Sox to the American League pennant in 5 games over the defending champion Astros. I know you're probably tired of the Red Sox after they finally won 3 World Series in 10 years, busting through that curse, and they made those New England fans even more insufferable. But I'm telling you, this team is likable. Even the derided and enigmatic $217 million pitcher David Price, who finally lifted his burden as baseball's all-time postseason flop as a starter, with his best clutch start yet. In fact, his only good start. 6 innings, 9 strikeouts, 3 hits, no runs. I shouldn't say that. He had a couple of quality starts. But David Price has had some ugly performances, and he had to feel good for him. He won for the first time in 12 playoff starts since 2011, and he was quick to praise those analytics people up top for telling him to go back to his changeup, which has been a problematic pitch in recent years, but it was filthy in Game 5 against Houston. Price now is back to chirping at opponents instead of causing trouble in his own locker room, telling Alex Bregman, post that, after Bregman, an avid Instagrammer, struck out in the eighth. Also credit Cora for Price's turnaround as well. Cora called out a radio host yesterday, saying he should apologize to Price for comments on the MLB Network. And wait a minute, wasn't Alex Cora on ESPN? I love these guys. They're media guys. Mariotti aside, they're media guys, and then they become managers. No, the media sucks. But when you were collecting that money from ESPN, oh, you're just sitting there, Alex, every night criticizing people. Okay, Alex Cora. I'm sorry. I'm not going to ruin his great moment. That bothers the hell out of me. Shannon Sharp. All right, I'm not going to keep going here. You see where I'm coming from. In the celebration after the division series victory over the Yankees, Cora immediately grabbed Price, told him he'd be starting game two in the ALCS. When Chris Sale came up ill, Cora, on the eve of game five, told Price again, you're going to be starting for me. Price struggled in that previous game. The Red Sox managed to win that game behind that offense, but then Price was brilliant last night. This offense, Mookie Betts, J.D. Martinez, all the rest, producing like few in recent postseason history. And I think all of this makes Boston the favorite in the World Series against the Dodgers, at least we hope so, or the Brewers. No, I don't want any part of the Brewers in the World Series and that bullpenning thing. No, we need the classic Americana World Series, Boston, Los Angeles, which is never happened. I think I've said that about 10 times in the last 2 weeks. In the clincher, it was Rafael Devers with the three-run homer off Justin Verlander. And so much for my prediction that the Astros were the most complete team and would become the first repeat champ since the Yankees of 1998 through 2000. The Stros were let down by the supposedly airtight starting pitching. Verlander, Cole, Keuchel, Morton, all with clunkers. And when Jackie Bradley Jr. spanked the controversial closer Roberto Osuna with a grand slam in Game 3, you sensed that the beautiful Houston story of a year ago was disintegrating amid very accurate reports that Astros management has been setting up surveillance to see if opponents are stealing signs. That's spying. I got down on them yesterday. I keep doing that, you know, because I'm still mad, so I want to do it again, but we need to move on here. In the end, the Astros should have been looking in the mirror because they crashed hard and had a lot of baseball insiders laughing at their failed arrogance and their entitlement in the spying thing. Here was Cora, who on his 43rd birthday, only 43, cemented one of the most impressive rookie managerial performances maybe in sports history.
I'm very proud of these guys. To come to this environment and win three games in a row the way we did it, it's been amazing. Since day one, very consistent with their approach, with the way they do their thing. They don't get caught up on whatever people think about them and favorites and odds and all that. We just show up and work, and I'm very happy for everybody here.
The players absolutely love him, and how many managers in Boston have been hated in the clubhouse? John Farrell at the end, Bobby Valentine. They serenaded Cora after the victory. Why not? Happy birthday, Alex. You're going to the World Series.
Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday!
And here was David Price with his toddler son on the podium, with continuing excellence from him paramount in the World Series. With the health of Chris Sale still uncertain, though Sale will make his next start.
David, when he's old enough to understand and asks you to tell him about tonight, what will you tell him?
He was a trooper. You know, he took a little nap right after the game started. This is 3 hours past his bedtime, but he's been to the last two games and stayed up longer than he's ever stayed up. So this was, we appreciate it.
What will you tell him about what it meant to you?
It's one of the most special days I've ever had on the baseball field. So, very special.
The Astros' demise was sudden and rather startling, considering their dominance in the first four postseason games. Too much drama accompanied this team. Here was manager A.J. Hinch praising the Red Sox, as he should have.
You know, before we get started, can I just say something real quick?
Of course.
I'll ask my own question. I just want to start by congratulating the Boston Red Sox on representing the American League. In the World Series, that goes to you know, Alex Cora, his coaching staff, the players, Dave Dombrowski's front office. American League's really proud that Boston is going to well represent the American League. So I want that on the record. What I learned about our team is we weren't affected by that. You know, at the end, we ran out of wins. We were beat up like a lot of teams are this time of year. But we have a resilient group. We got a ton of heart. We have a selfless group. That had their priorities in the right places. To run the gauntlet in 1 year is an incredible accomplishment. To do it again is, feels like even harder.
As I've been saying ad nauseum, a Dodgers-Red Sox World Series would be a precious slice of Americana. Two blue bloods who have never faced each other in a fall classic unless you're counting the 1916 Brooklyn Robins as the Dodgers, and I'm not. But a wild crowd awaits the Dodgers Friday night in Milwaukee, where animosity is high for the dirty Dodger, Manny Machado. Do not be surprised if this goes seven games. And for all the backfiring bullpenning of the Brewers, I would not discount them, much as MLB, Fox, me, you, and everybody outside Wisconsin is pulling for Boston, L.A. And this might be recalled as the week that college basketball died, at least as we've known it, as Kansas coach Bill Self was accused in a New York courtroom of requesting an improper $20,000 payment to recruit Silvio D'Souza via one of those Adidas executives. That makes him the latest big-name coach accused of participating in this sleaze racket involving shoe companies, agents, coaches, and institutions of higher learning. The NBA, on the same day, was announcing that its G League will offer select contracts worth $125,000 to elite prospects. No coincidence here at all. This means top teenager players who are at least 18 but not yet eligible for the NBA draft can bypass college hoops and play in the NBA Developmental League for a six-figure salary. Now, if it were my son, I would prefer he still go to college as long as possible, even for a year to, I don't know, build a social bridge to adulthood. But so many of these kids want a taste of the NBA immediately without the classroom and the study hall. And the NBA has created this option that obviously will attract top talent and significantly dilute the college game. The NCAA tournament always will have a certain appeal because of the gambling element and the fresh, cool stories of March. But this one-and-done era is about to shrivel up, as will the recruiting con game of Kentucky's John Calipari and perhaps even Duke legend Mike Krzyzewski goes down. Did I dare say that? Of course, college programs can simply up the ante to bid against the NBA to, $150,000, $200,000 for a player. And while the FBI has caught the college game in this dirty ringer, don't be shocked if these programs are so arrogant that they keep cheating their asses off. The select contracts for this G League start next summer, and that commotion you're hearing is the sound of TV networks bidding for this enhanced G League. Yes, the NBA just might have killed off college basketball. One question, will Commissioner Adam Silver care enough about education to require a player take classes during that one in-between year? Just a thought, a very good thought. To the NFL, where Arizona's Josh Rosen was wickedly bad in receiving his rookie hazing from the Denver Broncos in a 45-10 blowout. How bad was this for Rosen? Two pick sixes among his three interceptions, five sacks, three fumbles, two lost. That's five turnovers against Von Miller, Bradley Chubb, and a revived Denver defense, which saved head coach Vance Joseph's job, at least for now. Here was the battered Rosen, who was seen yelling at the Cardinals' sideline more than once, as he did back at UCLA, which means Byron Leftwich soon will be taking over as offensive coordinator, as if that will help this team. Here was chosen Rosen, or should we say frozen Rosen.
I think it was like kind of an old saying I got in college from one of my coaches, said don't turn a car crash into a fatality. So I think sometimes you just got to make the smart play, and I can't just kind of toss it up there. I even got lucky on some of these, the fumbles that were fumbles and some that were. So I just got to take care of the ball for the most part. I think that was pretty the biggest lesson that I could take from the game.
It will be interesting to see how Rosen, known for his brashness, deals with an awful football team, while Sam Bradford, the veteran, who is very healthy, stands on the sideline making $20 million this season. And you're going to let Rosen get beat up all year? Why was Rosen still on the field late in the game when he suffered a left foot injury? Coach Steve Wilks, way out of his league, took the blame for that. I'd say Bruce Arians got the hell out of there just in time. Remember the relentless blather of Jalen Ramsey, who insulted, I don't know, a couple of dozen opposing quarterbacks and other skill position players to any writer who interviewed him in the offseason? Well, as the Jaguars struggle on defense, Ramsey suddenly is a man of few words, saying little about anything, including Houston's DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
What's up? Where's the confidence level this week in the defense? You guys still have that confidence? You guys can bounce back this week defensively?
We'll see.
What's your
thoughts on
going up against Hopkins?
Same as usual. Same as it's always been. All the other, my past 2 years, y'all asked me the same question. Last year, y'all asked me. Next question.
Is he one of the guys you really like going up against? I know you like going up against AB, you said.
Yeah.
Why? You guys talk a lot? You enjoy the banter back and forth? Or, you know, just testing yourself against him?
It's a good matchup.
It's a pretty big change in mentality, Jalen, for the defense. Like, you guys have always had confidence, and now it's, we'll see if we have the confidence. Why such a change?
We still got confidence, but we're going to see how the game goes.
You guys only saw Watson for the second half of the opener last year. What did you see in that from him? What did you see on tape this year?
Really good. All right.
Divas are respected when they back up their words, but they're forgotten when they fail to perform, then go silent. And the L.A. Chargers, forgotten here in the NFL shadow of the Rams and the larger shadow of LeBron and the Dodgers, insist they are not moving anywhere despite concerns expressed by NFL owners at the league meetings this week. With San Diego effectively boycotting the team that fled town and the Chargers drawing few fans to their Carson soccer field, the opponents always have many more fans, ownership has dropped its initial revenue goals in that new Inglewood Stadium in 2 years from $400 million to around $150 million. That's a significant slash. And I don't mean Guns N' Roses slash. Indeed, the Chargers are offering season tickets for markedly lower prices than the Rams in that shared stadium arrangement, making them the Clippers and the Rams the Lakers in this L.A. two-tier Football Society, and none of this very good for the future of the Chargers. As I've been saying for a couple of years, the NFL did no homework about the social makeup of Southern California. There might be 15 million people in the region, but the percentage of diehard sports fans is much lower than in other large markets. Then you've got the transplant factor. So many people from other cities work out here, and they congregate in local bars watching their hometown teams instead of ever adopting the Rams, much less the Chargers. It's possible the Chargers will make the playoffs with gate attractions such as Old Man Rivers, Melvin Gordon, and a strong defense. But around here, the unbeaten Rams still are only the number three sports story, even with a Super Bowl caliber team. The Chargers could win four Super Bowls in LA, and people might not notice. So, yes, I think the NFL owners are right to be concerned, but the Chargers say they have signed a 20-year lease in Inglewood in that luxurious stadium owned by Rams owner Stan Kroenke, and that they aren't going anywhere. Besides, where would you put the Chargers? Back in San Diego? I don't think they'll have them. And then there's this. Does Roger Goodell realize there are more Raiders fans in L.A. than Rams and Charger fans combined, and that those fans will be heading to Las Vegas in 2 years and not going to the Inglewood Stadium? Speaking of the Raiders, John Gruden has been a disaster for his 10-year, $100 million deal, and already a website, Is Gruden Gone Yet?, is gaining internet traction. The site lists the exact time to the second left on Gruden's 10-year deal and the amount of money owed. Gruden has stopped telling jokes about his fear of flying and did say, if I can't get it done here, I'm not going to take their money. Okay, we're going to hold you to that. Is that this year, next year? I still say Gruden doesn't make it to Vegas. Gruden also can't even fill out an injury report correctly. The Raiders were fined $20,000 this week for an infraction. Here is the old version of Chucky, who has the richest coaching contract, remember, in the history of planet Earth, insisting the Raiders are not tanking the season for a top draft pick.
You know, I'll say this, we're not tanking anything. You know, I hear the hatred out there, some of the rumors that we're tanking it to get a first-round pick or a higher pick. You know, we're not getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to tank it. Ain't nobody tanking it. And I don't know who wrote that or who said that or who thinks that, but that ain't the case here. You know, we're going to continue to work hard, continue to build our team.
We have reached the point of the NFL season, Week 7, where we just analyze the major games. And if you're wondering why TV ratings are up in the NFL, consider that through 6 weeks, 54 of the 93 games have been decided by a single score, tied for the most in NFL history. The games are close. You're watching to the end. Of course the ratings go up, and there's absolutely no national anthem drama anymore. So, of course, close games, big offense, no anthem, no Trump, better ratings. Dallas at Washington. The Redskins are as weird as their owner, Dan Snyder, who has angered the locals so much that you wonder if more of the same empty seats will be there for this traditional rivalry. Expect a heavy rushing load from Zeke Elliott, allowing Dak Prescott more big play opportunities. They are coming together, and the Cowboys take over the lead of a weak-ass division. Cowboys 23, Redskins 17. Cincinnati at Kansas City. The Chiefs are not going to win a Super Bowl despite that explosive offense because their defense is horrendous. The Bengals might exploit that with Andy Dalton and A.J. Green, but even though Patrick Mahomes has thrown four picks in his last two games, home field wins on another exciting Sunday night for NBC, the official network of Patrick Mahomes. Chiefs 38, Bengals 31. Houston at Jacksonville. The Jags will respond to criticism from all corners, including their coach Doug Marrone. And if the defense takes jabs from Watson, it also will force much-needed turnovers against the flaky Houston Texans. Jags 26, Texans 20. New England at Chicago. This is the biggest game at Soldier Field in a long time. And I say, believe it or not, the Patriots will be swallowed up in that fury. I don't understand why Bill Belichick, the antithesis of a locker room bulletin board, chose this week to dismiss Bears monster Khalil Mack when somebody tried to compare him to Belichick's all-time favorite, the great Lawrence Taylor.
Bill, you've seen a lot of good pass rushers in your career, starting with Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White. Does Mack sort of rank up there with one of the better ones you've seen?
Oh, I remember talking about Lawrence Taylor now. Yeah, I'm not putting anybody in Lawrence Taylor's class, so... You put everybody down below that. That's with a lot of respect to a lot of good players now, but we're talking about Lawrence Taylor.
Mitchell Trubisky carves up the Belichick defense. Did I just say that? Bears 27, Patriots 23. New Orleans at Baltimore. Both teams have caught our attention. The Saints with the offensive mastery of ageless Drew Brees and the Ravens with their defense. So who wins a game between a team averaging 36 a game and another allowing 12.8 a game? It's 2018, so take the offense as Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram get the running attack going. Saints 23, Ravens 13. Quickly, winners only here. The Vikings seize a down game from the erratic Sam Darnold, and Adam Thielen ties the NFL record. Who? For most 100-yard receiving games to start a season. I know Adam Thielen, but a lot of people are going, who? Minnesota. The Eagles haven't acquired a top running back before the trading deadline, as they did a year ago with Jay Ajayi, but Ajayi is hurt now. They need one. They don't have one, so they'll keep struggling at home against the bounce-back Panthers. The Chargers will have more home fans in London than they get in L.A., and I say they dominate the slumping Titans. Jameis Winston has forgotten how to win football games, but Baker Mayfield is starting to take big lumps in Cleveland. I think I'll take Tampa Bay if anybody cares. The Rams have not looked sensational the last 2 weeks, but they will get better against a mushy 49er defense. A shootout between Brock Osweiler and Matthew Stafford doesn't interest me much, but if Osweiler somehow wins again, the Dolphins are 5-2, and I think they will be. Bills Colts, if they must play this game, if they really have to, obviously take Andrew Luck over Derek Anderson, the third Buffalo starting quarterback this season. Please don't watch that game. If you watch that game, you have no life. It's difficult to blame Ohio State defensive end Nick Bosa from blowing off the rest of the college football season, knowing he could jeopardize his possible standing as the number one pick in the 2019 NFL draft. Bosa has left that program, will focus on rehabbing an injured core muscle, which hurts the Buckeyes' championship hopes, but does set up Bosa for a much larger payday in April as he joins his brother Joey in the NFL. That said, Dwayne Haskins has been a revelation at quarterback, and assuming Michigan takes care of Michigan State this week, and maybe we shouldn't assume that given Jim Harbaugh's record against rivals, big rivals, the Ohio State-Michigan game could decide one of those four college football playoff berths. Harbaugh, to his credit, is finished with bashing Michigan State on Twitter and in press conferences.
No, I think everybody could use a week off of cliches that have been thoroughly plowed for years.
Wait a minute. Did he say plowed? Is that a reference to Moo You, as Michigan State often is called? I'm going to say no. I think Harbaugh does have perspective. I think those wacky Twitter days are over. He needs to be serious and win and get to a Final Four. At the moment, my Final Four remains the same, though North Carolina State will be a handful for Clemson. I think Ohio State could encounter a little bit of tension at Purdue. A quick quiz. Where is Purdue located? Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Dun-dun-dun-dun. Dun, dun, boom, boom. Where is West Lafayette, Indiana? It's 2 hours, 3 hours from Chicago, and it's one of the worst drives in America. And believe it or not, you're thrilled to see a Steak and Shake. Well, just a Mariotti. aside there. And unless somebody kidnaps prized $10 million defensive coordinator Dave Aranda, there's no way LSU, after that stirring upset of Georgia, loses at home to Mississippi State, not with number one Alabama coming to Death Valley in a couple of weeks. That will be the game of the year, at least to that point in college football. 2 weeks away, Alabama at LSU. If you've never been, go check it out. That would be the day. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, for all the hullabaloo about LeBron coming to the Lakers, I've got to be honest, he was disappointing coming up rather empty in the fourth quarter. That might seem harsh first night out, but remember, I covered the Michael Jordan dynasty. And though the cast around James, I obviously understand, is young and checkered with veterans, I'm not giving him a season pass. He's the great LeBron James. I'm not going to look the other way. Are you?
I mean, Jay, let's hold on just a bit. And I know I've called out LeBron. I called him out last year, probably since he came into the league. But something about him in that purple and gold, and it's not because I'm a Laker fan, because I'm really not. Maybe it's because I'm in L.A. Maybe it's because I'm in sports radio in L.A. It's just engulfing me. But let's not just cut him off and worry about a season pass just yet. Just one game. Don't panic. They're going to lose probably tomorrow. They might lose Monday against the Spurs. It's the long play, Jay. And you got to say, it was more exciting to watch that than any Laker game the last however many seasons. So the king is in L.A. Is he truly the king? No, it's always going to be MJ. And we didn't give MJ any season passes. And Michael Jordan and LeBron James doesn't get one either. But let's just take a deep breath. Let's take a deep breath. I don't think MJ ever had to deal with the amount of young talent that LeBron has around him at the moment. Now, of course, LeBron has done all this. He's called his shot. He's been pulling the puppet strings of the Los Angeles Lakers. So this is exactly what he wanted. We'll see if it actually can pay off. But just deep breaths, deep breaths.
Chris, the Red Sox obliterated the Astros. Shocking. It's been a long time since I've been as impressed by a manager or a coach than I am with Alex Cora, who as a rookie making $800,000 in the pressure cooker of Boston led the Sox to the World Series. Amazing stuff. Chris, should management immediately give him about a tenfold raise? I mean, today, right now, this hour? My God, John Gruden has one victory. One for his $10 million salary this season with the NFL's Raiders.
Well, I think the John Gruden contract will be the greatest example of how to destroy a professional franchise quickly. In fact, that's what's happening. Alex Cora, impressive. I didn't really need to see the Red Sox in there, but it's a great story. And we know how Boston sports fans, they're still going to act like this is the first time, even though it's not. And it's exciting to watch. And if it ends up the Dodgers and Red Sox, what a storied World Series that will be. The Red Sox are going to drill my Los Angeles Dodgers, by the way. I'm just throwing that out there. But it'll be great for TV ratings, and it'll be great for those five-hour games that we can get used to.
And, Chris, now that the feds have nailed both Rick Pitino and Bill Self, are you worried that your beloved Coach K will be nailed next in the college basketball corruption trials? Or is Coach K Teflon? I say Teflon.
Jay, deep breath, deep breath. Coach K's got nothing on him, my friend. You got to prove something. You got to get something on him. We got nothing on him yet.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which leads us to our final segment, Quickies, which are just that quick. Kobe Bryant has won an Academy Award for his animated short, Dear Basketball. Kobe Bryant has a successful video series on ESPN. Kobe Bryant is a family man and doting father who someday will run the Lakers when Magic Johnson's work is done. So why, 15 years later, would an animated film festival drop Bryant from its jury over a 2003 sexual assault allegation? Again, allegation. Again, 15 years ago. A case that was dropped when Bryant's accuser in Colorado refused to testify. Later, Bryant admitted no guilt in a civil case that was settled out of court. I am an enormous supporter of all things Me Too movement. I want to make that clear right now. When that movement corroborates that a man is a monster, enough of a monster to go ahead and make that dramatic move with Kobe Bryant, Oscar Award winner. But unless somebody has additional evidence that hasn't surfaced in 15 years, I say please leave the man alone and stop reaching and stretching to identify targets. Organizations hurt their credibility that way. I want organizations to have full credibility. Going after Kobe Bryant 15 years later is unnecessary. And it took Carmelo Anthony, who always makes teams worse, exactly one night to mope about his new reserve role with the Houston Rockets, the first time he has come off the bench in his NBA career. He scored only 9 points in 27 minutes and struggled on both ends in a lopsided loss to Anthony Davis and New Orleans. Then Melo said this.
Challenging mentally more so than anything. having to prepare for the game differently. But other than that, it's a challenge all the way around. It's just a matter of how I'm going to react to that challenge and accepting that challenge, you know, which I am, which I will do.
The Rockets heeded the advice of Chris Paul in acquiring Anthony, but this isn't going to work. And you can forget about Houston as a contender until they dump him. He won't play defense, he'll complain all year, and he'll discombobulate everything. And never say we don't cover hockey on Unmuted. We used to marvel when Wayne Gretzky scored 92 goals in a season, Brett Hall challenged with 86. Those days long gone in a less freewheeling, more defense-oriented NHL. But Toronto star Austin Matthews has 10 goals in his first 8 games for the 6-2 Maple Leafs. And the dude grew up in that hockey hotbed of suburban Phoenix, where he went to Coyotes games and at first showed more interest in the Zamboni machine than taking slap shots. Baseball was Matthews' best sport, but you know why he chose hockey? He hated baseball's slow pace. Paging Rob Manfred. And if the easiest thing to do in sports is to make fun of Dwight Howard for whatever nonsensical drama is next, well, he keeps making it even easier. Howard, who has played for so many NBA teams I've lost track, sat out the Washington Wizards season opener because of, ready, wait for it, sore buttocks, according to the team. How does one get sore buttocks? And please, no dirty jokes. Known for chronic underachievement, the Wizards obviously won't turn into contenders because of Howard, who missed all of training camp and the entire preseason schedule. He has participated in one practice. The Wizards, of course, lost their opener by a point when Miami's Kelly Olynyk connected on the game-winning putback. That's just the sort of play where Howard in the post could have defended. Nope. In a league that has seen a hobbling Willis Reed charge out of the tunnel and Michael Jordan plays sick, 6'11", 270-pound Dwight Howard can't play with a sore butt. And his salary this season, $24.2 million. I'm crying. Now I'm going to cry. Do we have a vomit bag in the house? That's our show for our producer and editor, Chris. I'm Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life, even when you can't stop laughing. Sore buddy.
I like big butts, and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny. That when a girl walks in with an itty-bitty waist and a round thing in your face, you get sprung. Wanna pull up tough, because you notice that butt was stuck. Deep in the jeans she's wearing. I'm hooked, and I can't stop staring. Oh, baby, I want to get whipped up and take your picture. My homeboy's trying to warn me, but that butt you got makes
me so horny.
Ooh, rump of smooth skin. You say you want to get in my bed?